So the other day, we talked about the null hypothesis significance testing controversy, where the issue is, do we leave it alone? Probably not, because it's been used mediocre well. Ditch it, which is unlikely because we don't shift gears that well as a group, or do something to make it better. And that's sort of where we've landed. And of course, there's going to be differences in what we do to make it better across research communities and across time. The first thing that we looked at was confidence intervals. Confidence intervals are nice because they give more information than null hypothesis significance testing. In particular, one end of a confidence interval always corresponds with a null hypothesis. The other end of the confidence interval tells you just how different from that result what's the population description might be. And also, the range of the confidence interval gives you an idea of whether you should worry or not. Really big ranges suggest either that there's vast amounts of variability or that something has been done poorly, like a really small sample, or they've sampled outside of the target population and increased the variability. The next two conversations we want to have are also designed to give you things that are going to help improve on regular, just null hypothesis significance testing, which, remember, only answers the question, is the relationship in the sample strong enough to conclude there's a relationship in the population? All that null hypothesis significance testing asks is, should we treat the relationship as zero or as something else? That's it. That's all we get out of that. Maybe we'd like a little more. Effect sizes give us a one-number quantitative summary of the strength of that relationship. That's pretty sweet. Because that one-number quantitative summary can be arrived at from different studies that, while they're comparable, aren't exactly the same. See, if you were going to compare p-values and significance tests across studies, they need to be pretty tightly replications. You not only want the same operationalizations of the IV and the DV, but you want pretty strong representation of the particular design and the sample size, because p-value is strongly based on sample size. So effect sizes give us not only this wonderful quantitative summary, but one that we can use to compare studies that weren't run exactly the same. And that leads us to the first thing that I want you to hold on to, and we're going to come back and visit this several times. When we compare studies, we compare them based on their effect sizes, not their p-values. This is really important. This is so important, we're going to play Schoolhouse Rock. We're going to say it together. Here's what it is. When we compare studies, we compare their effect sizes, not their p-values. Here we go. When we compare studies, we compare their effect sizes, not their p-values. And I'll give you a chance to screw this up as we go along. Yes?
So I get, like, not comparing the exact p-values, but you also not compare the inference behind the p-values?
You worry about the inference, you celebrate when they're the same, and you worry what it means when they're not.
Mm-hmm. And you still look for effect sizes.
When we end up putting things together into a meta-analysis, what we're going to put together are the effect sizes, because that's what we bet the farm on. Okay. Two studies that show the same thing with different sample sizes will have the same effect size but different p-values. Which one do you want to trust? And it's the old trick question. I told you this when I was a graduate student. The trick question wasn't a trick question. It was a bitch question. It was just, they did it on purpose because the faculty argued about it. We had seven quantitative faculty, and it was 3-3-1 on the answer to this. You've run four studies. You found a correlation of 0.4 with each study. The studies were based on small samples. You retained the null all four times. What's your best estimate of the population correlation? 0.4 or 0? Let the games begin. Okay? That's the we're trying to solve. And today we'll try and solve it by thinking. At the end of the semester, we'll try and solve it by having another analytic technique called meta-analysis. Great question. Here's the thing you want to get. The difference between an effect size and a significance test is taking into account the size of the study. That isn't just representation. That's basically algebra. You take the effect size and you operate on it by taking into account the sample size, and you get a significance test. If you take a significance test and you strip the sample size out of it, you get an effect size. Now, obviously, there's more to it, or we wouldn't hardly bring it up. For any non-zero effect, the value of the test statistic will increase, as does the sample size. So T's, F's, and chi-squares all get bigger for the same size effect, all get bigger with sample size. So remember that thing about 2 out of 3 agreed with you or to go to the thing versus 200 out of 300? The chi-square difference between those two is huge. Try it. Do a goodness of fit chi-square, 2 versus 1 versus 200 versus 100. The chi-square difference is several orders of magnitude. For any non-zero effect size, increasing the effect size or an increase in the value of the test statistic will result in a lower p-value and greater confidence that the population effect size is non-zero. So there's two ways to push a p-value around. Bigger effect, bigger sample. Treat it like a confound. Just like in causal interpretation, if there's two things that can push something around, the IV and the confound, you don't know which one it is. So when you compare p-values across studies, you're not sure if they are differing in effect, differing in sample size, or in some combination. But notice, R isn't in that list. The R formula is specifically designed, literally, to ignore sample size. The Pearson product moment correlation. Where the hell did that come from? Well, Pearson. Product means literally what we do is we look at how well you did in this times how well you did in that. And the moment means that we're using the first moment, which is the average. And as you know, the average takes the n away. That's why we use averages instead of sums. Because if you did something 5 times with an average of 5, and I did something 1 time with an average of 5, you might have a total of 25, and I have a total of 5. Which is the better comparable, the average or the sum? With me? So the correlation does that on purpose, and that's why you don't see correlation listed up there. The correlation is not directly influenced by the sample size. That gives us something that we can use both as a significance test and as an effect size. And it's going to get better. So we want to have estimates of effect size or strength that are separable from our inferential statistical test. The key will be to compose these estimates so that the value of the estimate is independent of the size of the study. Which means we are literally going to take our significance test, suck the sample size out of it, and the only thing left is the effect size. When we use correlation, R is both a summary statistic and an effect size estimate. For any given n, degrees of freedom is n minus 2, we can look up the critical value, decide whether to retain or reject the null. We also know that the larger R is, positive or negative, then the stronger is our estimate of the linear relationship between the variables in the population. So R is magical in this way. It is both a significance test that is driven by R and an effect by n, and an effect size that is not driven by n. Jump on that train. Jacob Cohen, who did a lot of the early work on whether effect sizes are going to help behavioral scientists or not, and working in mostly applied personality and applied social psychology, came up with this set of rules. Small is 0.1, medium is 0.3, large is 0.5. Not every research area uses this. Let me be clear. We're going to adopt it just so we have a language to talk about and agree with. In particular, we're going to adopt Jacob Cohen's definition of big enough to care about. That's what small means to us. Small means not tiny, not meh, small, but big enough to care about. So in this entire conversation, when we ask, is it big enough to care about, our standard, our community standard is going to be 0.1. Just so we have a standard and we can grade things and give and figure out if you're following the rules right. Right? So correlation of 0.1 is big enough to care about. Less than 0.1? No. More than 0.1? Yes. Just so we have a place where we all start. It really does vary dramatically. When I was in graduate school, I did a lot of both applied work and laboratory work. I was a laboratory cognitive psychologist. And in that role, if I didn't get an effect size of at least 0.8, don't plan on publishing that, because there should be so much control and the manipulation should be so strong that those effects are huge and obvious. Doing applied work, I can't tell you the number of times that I have celebrated with alcohol in a second course of hors d'oeuvres a correlation of 0.05 or 0.06, because it wasn't zero. It did tell me another piece of information about the big, ugly, multi-causal world. So the standards vary dramatically. This is a good time to talk about standards and rules of thumb. Standards and rules of thumb are usually pretty good because they've survived. Within a research area, if the rule of thumb is 8 people in a condition, or an effect size of 0.4 is necessary before I care, if that rule of thumb has survived within a community, it's probably pretty good for that community in that topic. Where we run into trouble is when we grab rules of thumb and carry them off somewhere else. That's where we get into trouble. And so, this is part of the reason that you've heard me say, until you're sick of it, but sing along, you have to know the expectations of your research community. And one of the things is there, what is small, medium, and large? How big is big enough to care about? Here's an example. Now, this is your opportunity to forget what we all said together. Don't forget what we all said together. Here we go. Dr. Yep correlates the number of hours students studied for the exam with percent correct on the exam, found a correlation of 0.3, and it was significant. Dr. Nope checks up on this by rerunning the study with an N of 20, finding a linear relationship in the same direction of 0.3, but it's non-significant. Ready? Do these studies replicate each other? What are you going to compare, the R or the P?
The R.
Do these studies replicate each other?
Yes.
Why did they get different significance testing results?
Because they had different samples.
One used a sample of 48 plus 2. The other used a sample of 20. Every time you look at that R, look at that sample size. SPSS actually puts the sample size into the correlation table instead of the degrees of freedom. Long, horrible history behind that. What gets reported in APA is the degrees of freedom, N minus 2. Always stop and look. Before you even look at the p-value, look at the sample size and kind of decide how much that p-value is going to influence you. If it's a little tiny sample, you need big effects to be convincing in a small sample. The bigger the sample, the more convincing a small effect. That's the whole logic. Let me say it again. The bigger the sample, the more convincing is a small effect. So, and we'll talk about this more in a little bit, when you actually do the post hoc power analysis, you discover that Dr. Nope's null hypothesis has a 70% chance of being a type 2 error. That's the second cool thing about effect sizes, is it allows us to estimate the probability of a type 2 error when we retain the null. This is cool. Again, think how cool it would be if every time you were going to make a decision for the rest of your life, somebody leaned over your shoulder and said, you're about to fuck this up. You're about to make a mistake with a probability of 80%. Bah! Shit! Let me do something else. We already have a way to get an estimate of the probability of a type 1 if we reject the null. That's our p-value. Now we have a somewhat circuitous but useful way of asking if we retain the null, what's the chance that we're about to make a type 2 error? And type 3 errors are estimable, but we are not going to work that hard. In order to know if something flipped, you have to know how big it is to start with. And so by the time you're ready to calculate the probability of a type 3 error, you've decided which way the effect goes. And so it's hardly ever a useful computation. And given its anguish-laden complexity, we're just going to sort of notice when one could happen but not fret about estimating it. But what if we want to compare the results from studies that use different analyses, maybe because whether they used a quantitative or a qualitative IV or DV? We have a lot of flexibility. We have a lot of opportunity in the way we operationalize our IVs and DVs. We know that we should really only compare F values and their P values when the studies are the same size. Same thing with chi-square. And we can't compare F test to chi-square test. We can decide whether a hypothesis is supported or not. We can decide if a null hypothesis is rejected or not. But that's as far as we can go. And we'd like to make a closer summary. Hell, we'd like to make a comparison based on a single number quantitative estimate of the effect size. Oh, we have one. And so these are the two formulas that are on the very first page of the quiz prep and will be on the quiz if we don't solve the XLS problem. That on the left is how to turn a two group F into an R. And on the right is how to turn a 2x2 chi-square into an R. Painful. No, they're not. Notice what we've done. We start with a significance test value, the summary statistic, and we suck the sample size out of it, and we're left with R. Now notice, I'm going to say this in what I hope is the most humorous possible way. Notice there's no formula for turning an R into an R, because R is already R. Okay? My favorite is, somebody said once, I must have thrown away one of the tabs on the computator because I don't know how to turn an R into a O. And they sent me the email anyway because they thought it was funny. This is how far I got before I woke up. There's no way to turn an R. Thanks. Love, Jenny. This particular R is called by some eta, lowercase Greek eta. Eta is a more general statistic that looks at strength of relationship without being concerned with the shape of that relationship. For a correlation, R and eta are the same. For a 2x2 chi-square and a two-group ANOVA, R and eta are the same. Because what you're doing is you're plotting the mean difference between two groups. 2 points, one line, has to be linear. And we'll talk more about things in their squares. So here's the idea. I want to take a look at which performs better. Which performs better, PCs or Macs? Researcher 1 grabs 20 computers of each type, has research assistants working in shifts following a protocol, trying to talk you into ongoing equivalence. Keep each machine working continually for 24 hours and count the number of times each machine failed and was rebooted. So at the end of 24 hours, the Macs had an average of 3.6 failures, PCs 5.7 failures. There's a significant difference between the two. Now the reason we used an F was because... The reason we used an F was because we had a quantitative dependent variable. On the other one, we have 30 computers of each type, research assistants working in shifts following a protocol. Keep each machine working continually for 24 hours and measure the time each computer was running. A different quantitative index of how well the computer kept up. We get a significant difference, and again, Macs look better than PCs. So we can say that both of these studies using two different DVs had the same basic effect, a significant difference with PCs outperforming, but we might want more precise information, and that's what the effect size is for. It takes the information, it washes sample size out of the equation, and it tells us that these two studies were very, very similar in the strength of the relationship. This sort of thing is important to be able to do, especially when people are swapping out dependent variables across studies. Same sort of thing here. First persons comparing PCs and Macs, and they're working with statistical software, and they found a significant effect, and Macs did better. Here we're working with graphical editing software. We did not find an effect. All right. So looks like a difference because one effect, one's significant, the other's not significant. But we can only really compare those effects, those chi-squares and their p-values if it's based on the same sample size. Clearly it's not. There's not a huge difference, but maybe there's enough of a difference for something dramatic for a PowerPoint slide. These effects are almost exactly the same size. They're almost a medium-sized effect, which is enough to give us a 0.03 is enough to make most people really happy. Versus a 0.919, nobody's going to snudge it that far. Even the applied folks don't go much above 0.15. But they are almost exactly the same size effect. This is why we compare using R's, not P's. Yes?
So, just to make sure I understand, R is correlation and R is also effect.
It's one of the most common effect sizes. I'll show you some others before we go. The nice thing about R is, as you can see, I can leave an R as an R. I can turn Fs into Rs. I can turn chi-squares into Rs. Okay. Most of the other effect sizes are tied to some particular kind of variable set and kind of statistical analysis. I like this one because I do a lot of meta-analyses where people have done whatever the hell they wanted for 20 or 30 years, and there is no comparability until you get to here. Great question. And we can play the same game if one study uses an F and the other study uses a chi-square. This is probably the coolest thing, because I think I've told you that the reason chi-square is important is because more and more people are going back to or moving over to or discovering qualitative categorical dependent variables. There's a lot of things that we really do care about. What kind is it? Not how much of something is it? And so again, these p-values are tempting to compare, but have nothing to do with each other. So you crank out the effect sizes and you find out that these two studies are telling us that there is between a medium and a strong positive relationship. Macs are doing better than PCs, and it is not a sniveling little relationship that was being carried along by a huge sample size. This is what's cool about, the first thing that's cool about effect sizes.